Shabbos daf Kuf Mem Aleph. We are starting with the Mishnah Kuf Mem Amud Beis. We are here in the 20th parak of Maseches Shabbos. This parak is dedicated to the topic of food preparation. Our Mishnah here is going to be talking about food preparation as it relates to animals. The parak up until now has been talking about food preparation as it relates to people. But now, also, animals have to be fed as well. A person has an animal on Shabbos where the animal is dependent upon you to feed him, so there is an obligation to feed him, obviously, both during the week and on Shabbos as well. The food that is reserved for the animal is not going to be muksa. And so the Mishnah is going to be dealing with a couple of issues that are related to the preparation of the food for the animal. The Mishnah begins, Gorfin milfnei hapitam, that one is allowed to sweep for an animal that one plans on feeding the animal. We're talking about sweeping the trough in front of the animal. Pitam over here is a description of the animal itself. Literally, you're fattening up the animal. And so the trough over here, designed for the animal, one is allowed to sweep the trough in order to make sure that there's no dirt that gets mixed in with the food. Umisalkin litzdad mibnei hari'i. And also, if you want to sweep some of the food to the side because of the ri'i, the excrement. And the way Rashi describes it, is that there's a lot of food in front of the animal, and we're afraid that the animal starts stepping on the food, so there's going to be excrement on the feet, which is then going to land on the food, and it's going to make the food unappealing to the animal. So as a result of that, what you want to do is you want to sweep the food to the side so the animal doesn't step on the food. So according to Rabbi Dosa, let me just read the words of the Mishnah, Divrei Rabbi Dosa, these are the words of Rabbi Dosa. According to Rabbi Dosa, one is allowed to engage in both of these activities, the sweeping of the trough in general, and also moving the food to the side of the Chachamim Osrim, and the Chachamim are going to Aser. Which one? The Gemara is going to discuss. One is allowed to move from the food from one animal in order to give it to another animal on Shabbos. Basically, you're allowed to take the leftovers from one animal and give it to another animal. The Gemara is going to be discussing this in more detail. We start with the Gemara Ibailuhu. The Gemara wants to know, Rabbanan Aresha Pligi or Asefa Pligi. When the Chachamim are arguing with Rabbi Dosa, are they arguing with his first point or with his second point? Oh, Atarvayu Pligi, or maybe they're actually the Chachamim are arguing on both of the points of Rabbi Dosa. Tashma, the Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, V'chachamim omri mechazeh v'chazeh lo yisalkenu litzdadin. So here in the Braisa, clearly the Chachamim are arguing on both points, both on the point of Gorfin milfnei hapitam and misalken litzdadin. So let's first tackle the first issue, and that's Gorfin lifnei hapitam, that one is not allowed to sweep the trough. What exactly is the issue? The Gemara now is going to clarify. I'm Rav Chista Machlokas be'evus shel karka. The trough over here is actually in the ground. Aval be'evus shel kli divrakol mutter. But according to Rav Chista, if the trough is actually utensils, then everyone is in agreement that you're allowed to sweep the area of the trough as long as it's a kli. Ve'evus shel karka mi'ikal aman deshar. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. You're telling me that there's a debate if the trough is in the ground, and you're telling me that Rav Dosa is being makel. Who would be makel under such circumstances? Hakamashi gumos. If the trough is in the ground, basically what we're looking at over here is basically sweeping of the ground directly. Sweeping of the ground directly would level the ground, and that would be mashvei grumos, and that would be a malacha on Shabbos. That would be bona, that would be building, as you are now leveling the ground. And the Gemara now wants to know, there can't possibly be anyone who's going to be makel under those circumstances, and so therefore the way the Rav Chista set up the machlokas, that they're talking about the trough is in the ground, that's simply an untenable explanation because no one would be makel under those circumstances. Ela'i itmar hachi itmar. So the Gemara therefore clarifies and corrects. Amar Rav Chista machlokas be'eva shel kli. The debate between Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim is when the trough is a kli. Aval be'eva shel karka divrei kol aser. But if the trough is in the ground, so then everyone would agree that that would be aser because that is leveling the ground and that for sure would be aser. And now what if it's a kli? So according to Rabbi Dosa, he's makel because that is not working on the ground and so therefore you're not violating the malacha of bona, and according to the Chachamim, as Rashi explains it, so it's true that a kli is not the ground, but nevertheless, a rabbinical decree that once we get used to the idea of sweeping the trough, so then you're not going to discriminate between one trough and another, and so you'll sweep the one that's a kli, but then you'll do the one that's the karka, and so it is xera. That's the way Rashi understands it. And then I would imagine the Gemara doesn't discuss the next issue, but the next issue, misakon l'tzdadim, pretty much is going to be the same issue. Presumably, the Gemara honestly doesn't talk about it, but presumably it's going to be the same issue as well. But note limilifne behema. Now we're going to be talking about taking the leftovers from one animal and moving it to another animal. And animal tanachada. The Gemara quotes two brises. Note limilifne behema shapia yafe, venos limilifne behema shapia ra. So one brisa says that you can actually take the leftovers of an animal whose mouth is good and bring it to another animal whose mouth is bad. These terms are going to be defined in just a moment. But meanwhile, there's another brisa that says, v'nosen lifnei behema shepiyah yafeh. One can take the food from an animal whose mouth is bad and put it in front of an animal which his mouth is good. So whatever the words mean, piyah ra, piyah yafeh, the two brises are at odds with one another, and so there absolutely needs to be clarification. Amar Abai, the Abai does give the clarification, and that is idiv idiv mekame chamer lekame tura shaklinan, mekame tura lekame chamer lo shaklinan. So Abai says, look, the two brises actually are in agreement with one another, and so first let's state the rule, and then we'll give the explanation of both of the brises. If you're going to take the food left over from a donkey and put it in front of an ox, that would be fine. So the leftovers that the donkey was eating can be taken on Shabbos and moved in front of an ox. But the converse is not true. You can't take the leftovers of an ox and move it in front of a donkey. Okay, now the explanation. So the Gemara says, look, and as far as the Braisa is concerned, here's Pshat in the Braisa. You're taking the food from an animal whose mouth is good. That's talking about the donkey. The donkey does not have a line of saliva, some drool running down of its mouth. And so therefore, the leftovers of what the donkey ate is going to be, for the most part, clean. And so therefore, when you take it and put it in front of the ox will not dismiss it because it's going to be clean. Now you can take the food and put it in front of the ox. The ox who's got a line of drool coming out of its mouth, and so that's why in the Braisa it's described as a mouth whose mouth is bad, i.e. it drools. So the Gemara says that's the pshat in the first Braisa. Now what about the other Braisa, which is actually describing the same scenario? Now as far as the other Braisa that talks about the mouth who's bad, that's describing the chamor, that's the donkey, in the context of where the donkey doesn't discriminate what it's going to eat. The donkey is ready to eat anything. You can take his food and give it to the animal whose pia is yafeh, v'nosen lefnei behema shepia yafeh bipara. That's still talking about the cow, the dike of achla, because he does discriminate what he's going to eat. And now, if you gave him something that was unseemly, he wouldn't eat it. And by virtue of the fact that it was just eaten by a donkey, and the donkey's mouth is clean, as per the first brisa, so now the cow will be fine eating the food of the donkey. It comes out to be that both Braisas now, as Abai explains, really means the same thing. It's just that in one scenario, the Braisa was describing the drool coming out of the mouth. That's why the ox's mouth is bad, the donkey's mouth is good. And then the other Braisa was talking about in terms of what it will or will not eat. There, the donkey's mouth is bad, i.e. it doesn't discriminate, and the cow's mouth is good, i.e. it does discriminate, but it comes out to be the same idea. We are in the Mishnah, Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, Hakash She'agabi Hamita, Lo Yinanena B'yado. We're talking about the straw on the bed, and the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to move it with your hands, Ela Menaneh B'gufo, but you're going to move it with your body. And as Rashi over here explains, the first Rashi on the Mishnah, V'stam La'asaka, we're talking about straw where, going into Shabbos, it was not meant as a mattress, but it was meant actually as fuel for the fire. And therefore Rashi writes a Muksahu. Now that it is designed to be used as fuel, going into Shabbos, so it has the standard status of muksa. Ubalishka v'alav umenano k'deshet saf v'rach l'shachev. And Rashi says that what you want to do now on Shabbos is you actually want to soften up because you decided that you want to use that as your mattress. And so, can you basically fluff it up on Shabbos? And what the Mishnah is saying is you can't do it with your hands, but you can do so with your body. And Rashi over here writes, aval menane begufo b'ktefav. You're moving it with your shoulders, and not, of course, Rashi doesn't limit to the shoulders. Any other part of your body other than your hands. And Rashi writes, v'tiltum menetzadhu. Interesting, Rashi describes it as tiltum menetzad, delosh me tiltum, and that's not tiltum. And so over here, as we're going to be discussing it both in the Mishnah and in the upcoming Gemara, so we're going to be discussing the topic of tiltum menetzad, and that is moving muksa indirectly. Although, to be fair and to be honest, we're describing moving muksa indirectly in one of two different ways. In the Gemara's discussion, which we're going to see in just a couple of moments from now, we're describing moving the muksa indirectly, i.e. you're moving one item. That item is now going to be pushing muksa aside, but that is indirect movement because you're not directly touching the muksa itself. Over here in the case of the straw, you are touching the muksa, but you're just simply not touching it with your hands. So the truth of the matter is that we're describing tiltum menatzad, but really we could subdivide into two different categories. Tiltum menatzad in our Mishnah is talking about moving muksa, but not using your hands, using other parts of your body. Your torso, your legs, whatever, just anything but your hands. In the Gemara's discussion, we're going to be talking about moving muksa with your hands, but not directly, rather indirectly, meaning you're moving something which is not muksa. That, in turn, is going to be moving muksa. So So that's indirect movement of muksa. So there really are two different categories of tiltum and atzad. There's the one we're describing in the Mishnah, the one coming up in the Gemara. Are they perfectly comparable with each other? So this is a discussion amongst the Rishonim. The Rush in the back in the third parak discussed this at length. And so a closer look at the Rishonim on this topic would indicate that they're not exactly the same category. For our purposes right now for the daf, we're just simply going to look at them as the same, but with the recognition that they may not be exactly on the same field with each other. Anyway, let's go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that moving the straw with your body would be okay. Vima yamaycha behema, continuing in the Mishnah. Now, if this straw was designed before Shabbos to be used as animal fodder, osha yilav kar osadin, or let's say you already put a pillow on it before Shabbos, clearly expressing the idea that you want to use it as a mattress, so then minane biyado. So either because it's animal food or because you clearly designed it as mattress going into Shabbos, so now it's no longer moksa, and now you can move it with your hands. Michba shabalabatim matirna velo kovshin. Now we're going to be talking about presses, the presses that were used to press clothing. They had back in the day a very simple apparatus. It was basically two beams. What they would do is they would take one beam, put it down. Rashi gives a lengthy description over here. It's on four pegs. But anyway, so you take the lower beam, and then you put a shirt on top of the lower beam. Then you put an upper beam on top of it, and you push it down. And then, using the four pegs, you're going to press it down. Right? Basically, you'll use some sort of lever or some sort of pin in order to make sure that it's pressed down hard. And so this is a simple press that they had back in the day. This is the Michba Shel Balabatim. Balabatim over here just simply means the homeowner used it. We're going to be talking just a moment in the Mishnah about the ones used by the professionals. But meanwhile, the Mishnah here first starts off by talking about the press of the Balabatim. So the Mishnah says, Matirin, that you can undo it. You can unlatch it on Shabbos in order to take a shirt out. Avalo Kovshin. But what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos is that you're not allowed to press it down. Interesting, Rashi over here. Rashi, in terms of unlatching it, so Rashi says, Matirna samichba shenotel sayateid, vuhu nitar, dahinu sarach Shabbos, shenotel, sarach, shenotel, esakelim. So the shirt, fact of the matter is that you're going to plan on using the shirt for Shabbos, it's sarach Shabbos, and so therefore you're allowed to undo the latch. Pressing it down, says Rashi, aval lo kovshim, dahinu sarach chol. So interesting, Rashi says, because it's sarach chol, it's necessary for the week. Presumably what Rashi means is that if you put a shirt there for the first time on Shabbos, it doesn't press immediately. In other words, remember, this is not like a hot iron. It's just simply pressure that's pushing down on it. So presumably what Rashi means is that once, if you do it for the first time on Shabbos itself, so then it's only going to be ready for the week, and that is something now in preparation for the week. It could be that Rashi over here is describing that this is uvda dechol, although a simple reading of Rashi does not indicate that, but I'm certainly open to the idea. Vishokovsim lo yigabo. Now, if this is a press that's used by a professional, lo yigabo, you're not allowed to use it. Rashi over here writes, me meshu asu lesaken begadim v'tochvo bechazaka. So this is professional grade. It really creates tikkun begadim. It really creates a qualitative improvement on the clothing. And Rashi says, mahadek v'hatar shalo dom l'stira. Because it's tied so tightly, if it's untied, it's similar to stira, it's similar to destruction. So very interesting in terms of the explanation of why you can't touch it. Rashi over here says it looks like stira. Now, you could have offered a simpler pshat in the Mishnah, and that is that since this is professional grade, and since this is generally used by somebody who's a pro, so is the kli that is muksa machmas chisaron kis. Okay, you could have suggested such a pshat, but Rashi obviously over here doesn't work with that. Rashi describes it as something akin to stira. Rav Yehuda Omer im haya mutter me'er Shabbos matzis kula v'shamto. Rav Yehuda is of the position that if it was somewhat unlatched before Shabbos, so then you can finish unlatching it on Shabbos itself. Perhaps, by the way, this opinion of Rav Yehuda gives Rashi the idea that this isn't just simply a kli that is muksa machmas chisaron kis, because if that were true, then what difference does it make whether it was totally latched or partially unlatched? The impression you get from Rav Yehuda over here is that once it's partially unlatched, then it's no longer subject to stira. Okay. We're continuing now in the Gemara Amar of Nachman Haipugla. This is something which we learned earlier in the Masechta, but now the Gemara is going to review because it obviously is related to our topic of Tiltum and Atzad. If, let's say, you have a turnip and you put the turnip in the ground, and let's remind each other. The reason why you put the turnip in the ground to begin with before Shabbos is because you wanted to preserve it. Remember, their root vegetables that they pulled out of the ground, they didn't have any kind of refrigeration. And so how do you keep it fresh? So basically they put it in the ground, not to plant it, just simply to preserve it. So you have now your turnip, and it's got a nice V shape to it. So it's really tapered on one side and thick on the other side. And so it depends which way in the ground it went into, according to Rav Nachman. If you put it into the ground, milamala lamata, shari. So if you put it in, tapered side downward, so then pulling it up on Shabbos itself would be fine. Because since the thick side is closer to the top, so you're not moving any earth as you're pulling it up. Milamata lamala usar. However, if you invert it when you put it into the ground, so now the thick side is down and the tapered side is up, so now is when you pull it out of the ground, you're going to be moving dirt. And Rav Nachman's of the position that that is going to be a violation of muksa. Now, even though you're not moving the dirt directly, you're moving it indirectly, Rav Nachman still is of the position that this is a violation of muksa. So, Now, we're going to have a brisa that clearly does not support Rav Nachman. And that is Akasha, al gabi hamito lo yinana biyado av amanayne begufo. We're just going to simply restate our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we talked about the straw on the bed. So the latter half of the Mishnah is not relevant to our discussion because the latter half of the Mishnah talks about where it was designed as animal food or you put a pillow on it before Shabbos, where it's no longer muksa. But in the first half of the Mishnah, where it is muksa, so the Mishnah allows for tiltum and atzad. It allowed for indirect movement. So Shema Minah, so the Gemara says, Tiltum and Atzad, Lo Shmei Tiltum, Shema Minah. It's clear from our Mishnah that indirect movement of Muksa would be allowed. And now going to our little turnip that we're pulling out of the ground, so even though dirt is going to be moved, but you're not moving that dirt directly, you're only moving the dirt indirectly, and so therefore it's going to be Mutter. So our Mishnah seems to be a clear refutation of the position of Rav Nachman. Continuing now in the Gemara is going to now go over an assortment of other halachas that have to do with food preparation. It's going to be a little bit choppy in terms of trying to string together which topic we're going to and what other topic we're going to. The transitions of the Gemara are going to be a little bit tricky, but the general idea throughout this Gemara is that we're, for the most part, going to be talking about various aspects of food preparation, and we begin. I'm Rav Yehuda Hani Pilpalei. So Rav Yehuda now describes how one would be allowed to crush pepper. So meidak chada chada bekata de sakina. So first of all, one at a time, and using the back of a knife. Shari. Under those circumstances, it would be mutter, tarte aser. But if you take two at a time, it's going to be aser. Now, we are assuming, of course, that the grinding of food on Shabbos is going to be a violation of the melacha of tochein, and that goes that takes us back to the seventh parak where we already established this idea. And so therefore, you take a food and you grind it down to small particles, so that is the malach of tochein. But over here, there are two considerations. One, you're doing so in an unusual manner, using you're grinding it with the back of the knife. And number two, you're also doing it only one at a time. And with these two shinuyim, so then it would be allowed, then it would be mutter. Okay. Tosos over here does quote an opinion of the Sheoltos of Rav Achai, that this particular halacha is not talking about Shabbos, rather it's talking about anyantiv. On Yontif, we know we have a heter of ochel nefesh, so therefore there is more latitude in terms of what one can do for food preparation. And so Rav Achai says that this is specific to Yontif, not Shabbos. Tosos spends a long time, as you can see on the side of the Gemara over here, the long Tosos. Tosos spends a long time trying to disprove this position of Rav Achai. He firmly believes that this halacha of Rabbi Yehuda is specific to Shabbos, not to Yontif. And you could just simply, you could see, I mean, Tosos makes this point, that in our Gemara, there is no indication whatsoever that we transition from Shabbos to Yom Tov. It certainly sounds like we're still talking about Shabbos, and one of the simple proofs of Tosfos said this Gemara is talking about Shabbos, not Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, you can grind with no restriction whatsoever. That's what the Gemara in Beitza seems to indicate. Tosfos quotes the Gemara. Anyway, we're going to say it like Tosfos says this is talking about Shabbos, and even though Tochin is going to be Aser, however, if you do it with these two shinoyim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then it's going to be mutter. Rava Amar came in the Mishani, afilu tuvanami. Rava says, look, you already cut it with the back of the handle. That's already one shinui. That's all you need. You only need one shinui. You don't need two shinuyim. And so therefore, you don't have to limit yourself to just simply one pepper at a time. You can even do two at a time. Am Rabbi Yehuda, man desachi b'maya, lin giv nafshe b'reisha v'hadr lislik. Another halacha by Rav Yehuda. Now, this has nothing to do with food preparation, but I guess it's Rav Yehuda, although, again, transitions over here are going to be a little bit challenging. How are you moving from one topic to another? So I'm not always going to be in the best position to explain how we moved on to this next topic, but somebody who is now in water. In other words, he finds himself just walking through water, and now he wants to come and walk on the shore. So he should make sure that he dries himself off well first, and then afterwards he should continue walking on shore. Why? Because he's going to be drenched in water, and he's going to have all this water clinging to his body, and that is considered carrying the area proximate to the water. Now the water itself is considered an area of a karmelis. We talked about that earlier in the Masechta. And the Gemara is assuming right now that the area immediately proximate to the water is also karmelis. And so therefore, with the water on his body, he's going to be carrying four amos in a karmelis. And so that's why he should dry himself off well in order to make sure that there is no water left on his body. The Gemara says, Yihachi kikanachis nami kadachi kocho dal amos v'asr. The Gemara says, even when he's in the water. So isn't him being in the water going to create a ripple effect, pushing water? And isn't he effectively now pushing the water for amos in the karmelis? Again, the body of water itself also is a karmelis. So the Gemara says, kocho b'karmelis lo gazer. The Gemara says, yeah, but that is only coming as a result of his force, meaning he is not actually carrying the water. He's just simply moving the water. And the Gemara says, kocho b'karmelis lo gazer. There's no gzera of kocho as it relates to a karmelis. So in the water itself, there's no violation. But once he comes to shore and the water is going to be on his body, so then there would be a problem of him carrying the water for amos. Certainly a challenging Gemara to understand. He's not carrying in the conventional sense, meaning the water that's clinging to his body, that is not something that he is literally holding in his hands. It's just simply clinging to his body. But I guess what you would say is that this is considered darker. This is considered the usual manner of water and the way that water operates. And so therefore, in that regard, it's considered something which is normal. Amar Abai v'Tem Rav Yehuda. The Gemara over here describes clay or some sort of mud that gets stuck to your foot. So how do you rub it off on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, you simply rub it on the ground. But you don't rub it on a wall. So Rava says, let me try to understand this. The reason why you don't rub it against the wall is because you're now taking mud and you're adding it to the wall, and that's like binyan. The Gemara says, Habinyan Chaklahu. That's not binyan. The Gemara describes it as a village hut, meaning, but binyan requires you to build something which is solid and substantial. So, Allah Merava, Mekancha Bekotam, Mekancha Bekarka. So, Rava says, no, I think just the opposite. You rub your foot, the dirt, off on a wall, but not on the ground. Doma Asalashui Gomas, because if you rub it on the ground, there might already exist there some sort of hole, a depression, and now you're going to fill it with the mud. And now, Mashva Gumas, you're actually leveling the ground, which you already discussed now earlier in this daf. And now the Gemara discusses it again, and that obviously would be a malacha. So, Itmar, Marbury de Ravina, Amar Echazev Echazev Aser, and now the Amarim weigh in on this issue. Marbury de Ravina says that both would be Aser, Rapapa Amar Echazev Echazev Mutter. Rapapa says that both are going to be Mutter. La Marbury de Ravina, Bamai Mekan Chole. So the Gemara now wants to know, so according to Marbury de Ravina, where you're not allowed to rub your muddy foot on the ground, you're not allowed to rub your muddy foot on the wall, so what can you rub your muddy foot on? So Mekan Chole Bikor. So the Gemara says, what you're going to do is you're going to rub it on a beam. You'll find a beam and you rub it on the beam. Amar Rava lo leise vinish apume de leche, dilma minagdere leche, fitz vasi lasuye. Another halacha by Rava, and again, we're just kind of transitioning from one topic to another. Rava says that a person cannot sit immediately by the lechi. We're going to be spending a lot of time in Erevin on this topic. I'm just going to right now mention it really briefly, and that is we're talking about a standard mavui over here. In order to be able to carry in the mavui, so the mavui has to have that fourth side which is open into the Rishus Rabin. Either it's going to be flanked by a lechi or it's going to be flanked by a korah. Again, if you're not fully following when we get to Erevin, you're going to understand this much better. But anyway, the point over here is as follows. A person should not be standing right by the edge of the mavui, right next to the lechi. And the reason why is because what may end up happening is that something may roll out of his pocket and go right into the Rishus HaRabim. Now he's going to think to himself, okay, fine, I'll just simply pick it up and bring it up and bring it next to me. Now it's really hard to understand where the demarcation lies between the mavui and the Rishus HaRabim, because the mavui is open in its entirety to the Rishus HaRabim, and it's the only thing that is there to demarcate where one ends and the other is just simply the lechi. Lechi is not really that substantial. And here comes the problem. The problem is that in the person's mind, he's thinking to himself, well, I quickly got it and picked it up, and it didn't travel more than 4 amos, and so I didn't carry 4 amos in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and I should be good. But the truth of the matter is that he's wrong. And he's not only wrong, but he just violated Shabbos. Because the area circumscribed within the Mavui, that's a Rosh Hashanah min HaTorah. And the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is an area min HaTorah, which is a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And so therefore, when you transfer from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to Rosh Hashanah Yachid, it doesn't matter how far or how little you traversed. As long as you go from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, so you violate the Malach of Otsam in the Torah. And so this person, not realizing that he was right on the threshold between the Rosh Hashanah Yachid and the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, so he's going to now perhaps transfer from one to the other, not realizing that fatal error that he made, that it was less than Dal Amos, and therefore it's okay. And so, and he's going to violate the Malach of Otsam. And the Gemara says, Dilma min gerei lechefetz va'asil asuyeh. And that's exactly what may end up happening. He may end up carrying. Amar Rava lo litzed inish kuva dilma asil ashvigumos. Another quick halacha by Rava, and that is that let's say the barrel's on its side. And what you want to make sure is that the barrel doesn't roll away. And so what you're going to do is you're going to rock the barrel back and forth in order to make sure that you create almost like a small mini depression in the ground, and so that the barrel doesn't roll away. What may end up happening over there is that there was some hole in the ground, and by rocking it back and forth, you may have just simply leveled off the floor, and that would be a violation of being mashve gumos. Another halacha by Rava, and that is one should not take a wet tuft and stuff it into the hole of the barrel in order to stop up the barrel, because in doing so, what you're going to end up doing is you're going to be squeezing it out, you're going to be in violation of schita, and you may be violating one of two different malachas. One, the malacha of dash, by squeezing the liquid out of the tuft, whatever it is, it's cotton, it's linen, by squeezing it out, so you are going to be separating the liquid from the liquid inside from the tuft. That's a malacha of dash. And also, if it's white, so then if it's clear water, so then you also may be violating the malacha of liban as well. Amar Rav Kahana, Tisha Agabe Bigado, Mechas Keso Bimifnim, Ve Mechas Keso Mibachot. If you have a piece of mud on your clothing, so you can go ahead, you can rub it only but from the inside of the garment, not from the outside of the garment. Rashi writes over here, what is the issue in terms of rubbing it from the inside versus the outside? Rashi writes Mibifnim, it's one of the last Rashis on the Yom, it's second to last Rashi, the Lo Mucha Milsa Ischazuye. So as you're doing it from the inside, so this is a shinui, you're doing it now in somewhat of an unusual fashion, and so therefore there is no problem of appearances. Now Rashi continues to write, umalabin mamish lohave, meaning just rubbing it, even from the outside, is not mamish libun, the ain no sin shamayim, because you didn't put water over there. Meaning, if you have a stain and you put water on your clothing, so that is a malacha of libun. Then you're violating the isur d'oraisa of libun. So without water, so it's not an Isra Daraisa. But still, even though it's not an Isra Daraisa, but the Chachamim want us to remember and recognize that there still should be some caution in terms of removing the stain. And so that's why the Chachamim say, only do it from the inside of the shirt, not from the outside of the shirt. Okay, back to the Gemara, Meisvei. The Gemara now challenges with a Braisa, Tisha Agave Menalo, Megaro Be Gav Sakin. Vishal Bigdo, Megaro Be Tziporn of Avashali Chaschais. So, the Braisa over here talks about taking off mud off shoes and off your clothing. If it's mud on your shoe, so you take the back of a knife and you scrape it off with the back of the knife. Now, if it's on your clothing, so basically what you can do is you can scratch it off with your fingernail, but what you can't do is you can't rub it between your fingers. Now, in the Braisa, we're not given full clarity in terms of what you're not allowed to do in terms of rubbing. So, my lav shalei chaseis klal. Now, seemingly what the Braisa means is that you're not allowed to rub at all. And the Gemara says, no, what the Braisa actually means is that you're not allowed to rub from the outside, but what the Braisa does allow you to do is rub it from the inside. Exactly like we said in the name of Rav Kahana. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Yana, Megar min al chadash aval lo yashan. As long as we mention in the Braisa the rubbing off of the shoes, the scraping off the mud of the shoes, so the Gemara now is going to be discussing this in some more detail. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Yanai that one is allowed to rub off his new shoes, but not old shoes. What's the difference between new shoes and old shoes? So here again, we're going to take a look at Rashi. V'lo yashan shekolpo v'havei memachek. The old shoes now are going to everything. By the way, over here we're describing is made up of leather. The old shoes are are going to be slightly rough. And if you take a knife and you rub against it, so you're going to be smoothing it off. That's smoothing off the leather. That's called memachek. When we went through the malachas of Shabbos, memachek, the smoothing off of the leather, is one of the 39 malachas. It's one of the malachas specific to the preparation of the hides. And so therefore, if it's an old leather and you rub a knife against it, so you're in violation of memachek. New, presumably, it's already been filed down. It's already been smoothed down. And so therefore, rubbing a knife over it is not going to do anything to it. Now, in terms of the new leather, what are you wiping it with? As we are now on the top of the Amud Beis, Amar Rabbi Abau, Bigav Sakin. You're using the back of the knife, and I guess using the back of the knife is really going to make sure that you are not going to be doing any kind of act of michuk when it comes to the new leather. Amar Leahu Saba Sami Didach Mikame Had Ni Rebichia. So an elder comes over to him and he says to him, "Your brisa, you're going to have to remove, because of the brisa I'm about to introduce us to." And here, he quotes in the name Rabbi Chiya, "Ein megaren lo menal chadash lo menal yeshan." So here in this brisa, you're not allowed to scrape not a new shoe and not an old shoe. So in his brisa now, that is reporting, so there is no allowance for scraping, and in this brisa, regardless of whether it's an old shoe or a new shoe. On top of that, the brisa goes on to discuss other areas that you're not allowed to do with your shoes as well. "V'lo yisoch es raglo shemen." Now, if you want to try to rub oil into your foot, on your leg and into your foot, while the foot is in the shoe, that you're not allowed to do. Because obviously what's going to happen is that the oil is going to spill onto the shoe, and it's going to polish the shoe, and also it's going to treat the leather as well. And that's ibud, that's part of the processing of the leather, and that's going to be forbidden. Obisocha sandal, not just a shoe, but a sandal as well. Avasachas raglo shemen, umeniach besocha minal, obisocha sandal. So, but what the brisa allows is for the following. Let's say your foot now is not currently in the shoe. So to rub a little bit of oil onto your foot. And then, after you rub the oil on the foot, now to put the foot into a shoe, that would be fine. Additionally, it's a similar idea. If let's say you rub oil onto your skin, and then afterwards you want to lie down on a leather mattress, so that you're allowed to do. Some of the leather on your skin is going to go onto the mattress. Some of the leather on your foot is going to go into the shoe. So this is something that you're not intending to happen, and clearly you're not intending because you put on the oil before it was in the shoe and before you were on the mattress, and so therefore this is this falls under the category of a davar shenu miskavi. Amar Rav Chisa loshenu ela tzachtecha vela avdo aser. Now Rav Chisa says it really depends on one's intention. If your only intention is just simply to brighten the leather, so that would be okay. But if your intention is really to process the leather, so then that's going to be aser. The Gemara says la'avdo pshita. What do you mean? If your intention is to process the leather, of course it's going to be aser. This is ibud. This is part of the processing of the leather, and this is part of the malacha of ibud of the working of the leather. And even if you're only just interested in brightening the leather, anyone's going to tell you that it's mutter. So ela iyid ma'achiyid. So the Gemara says okay. So Rav Chisda is making a condition, but we just have to say it now over correctly. Amar Rav Chisda loshanu ela shir letzachzecho, avashir la'avdo aser. So Rav Chisda says that it depends how much oil we're talking about. If it's enough oil where the only it's a little bit, it's a nominal amount, and the only thing that it would do after after the old foot is going to go into the shoe is that most it's just going to brighten the shoe, so that's going to be fine. And oh, by the way, Rashi points out, and that can't be your intention, because if your intention is to brighten the shoe, so that in of itself is going to be aser. So, in order for the oiling up of your foot and then subsequently to put your foot in the shoe, it has to be two things. One, a nominal amount where at best all it could do is just brighten the shoe. And two, the way Rashi explains it, is that you didn't even have intention for this to happen. Aval, however, shir ala avdo, aser. But if the amount of oil that's on your foot is enough where it's not just simply going to brighten the oil, but it's really going to work the leather, and it's really going to create an ibud, it's really going to create a processing of the leather. So under those circumstances, it's going to be aser under all circumstances, regardless of what your intention is. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara here now is quoting a braisa regarding shoes. Tanur Rabbanan lo yetze katan b'min al gadol, aval yosehu b'chaluk gadol. A child, and child over here just simply means that he has smaller feet, so he shouldn't go out with larger shoes. And the concern, Rashi explains, is because the shoe may fall off his foot and then someone's going to end up picking up and perhaps carrying it. And so therefore, it is usher to put them on and walk outside with them to begin with. To wear a article of clothing, like a shirt that's too large, that would be okay. The shirt's not going to fall off. A woman cannot go out with a shoe that has some sort of tear in it. It'll be embarrassing to her. She'll be self-conscious. She's going to take it off, and she'll end up carrying it. Also, she can't do chalitza with it. If she does chalitza with it, however, b'di'evit, it's going to be fine. But l'chatchil, she should not do chalitza with it. Also, a woman cannot go out with a new shoe on Shabbos. And over here, we're talking about specifically new shoes worn by women. Rashi explains over here, and the Gemara is going to be pretty clear from the Gemara as well, that the concern over here would be that the woman who never tried the shoe on, so the shoe is going to be uncomfortable, and she's going to start walking with it in Rishos Rabin, but because it's so uncomfortable, she's going to end up taking it off and carrying it. Tinibar kapar lo shana ala shalo yatza ba sha'achaz mi ba'od yoma, val yatza bo, me'erev Shabbos mutter. And the Gemara adds on to that if she tried it on a little bit before Shabbos and it feels comfortable enough, so then she could rest assured that in fact such a shoe would be okay to wear and she'll be comfortable and she will not want to take it off on Shabbos. But if she never wore it before Shabbos, even though she thinks it looks like it's going to fit, she should not wear it for the first time on Shabbos for fear that it's going to be uncomfortable and she's going to take it off. Tanichada. Two more points as it relates, or I should say better. Two more braises as it relates to a shoe. Shomtim miname al gabe imus, v'tan idach ein shomtim. We're talking about taking the shoe off of the form. Okay, back in the day, I remember this in the previous generation, so it was very popular. Now, I would suggest it's a lot less popular. Personally, I didn't use one, but basically they're shoe trees. In order to keep your shoes in good shape, so they basically would have a wooden form, and they put the shoe... You put the wooden form in the shoe in order for the shoe to keep its shape. So that is what we're talking about over here, but quite frankly, it's not exactly the same. What we're really describing over here is the manufacturer, meaning the shoemaker. So when he would make a shoe, so he would have a form, and he would make the shoe, obviously, around the form. And as we're going to see together right now, the braisas are a little bit conflicted, not a little bit, the braisas are conflicted in terms of whether or not one on Shabbos is allowed to remove the shoe off the form on Shabbos. One braisa says shomtim in alme al gabi imus. So one braisa says that you're allowed to remove the shoe off the form. This is now going to be the first time since it was made. So you could take it off the form on Shabbos. And another braisa, tanyidach ein shomtim, that says that you're not allowed to. And the Gemara now is going to give an explanation in terms of how to understand the discrepancy that exists between these two braisas. Lo kasha, ha Rabbi Eliezer, ha Rabbanan. So there is no way to resolve it, just simply a machlokes hatanayim. And the Gemara goes on to explain that now we have a Mishnah here in Kalim. The Mishnah in Kalim, the 26th parak, describes a shoe, and the shoe is on the form, and the question now becomes, is it Mekabel Tumah or is it not Mekabel Tumah? We all know the basic rules. In order for anything to be Mekabel Tumah, it has to be a finished product, and it has to be a kli. If it's in process of being made, but it's not yet at the point of Gemar, so then it's not going to be Mekabel Tumah. Only at the point of Gemar is it going to be Mekabel Tumah. So we are right now looking at a shoe that is finished but still on the form. Is this now going to be considered the gemar of the shoe? And it's a machlokes satanayim. The Mishnah says, min al sha'al gabi imus, if the shoe is on the form, Rabbi Eliezer matarva chachamim matamim, so it's a machlokes satanayim. Rabbi Lazar says it's tar, meaning Rabbi Lazar says it is not viewed as a completed shoe until after it's removed off the form. The chachamim, on the other hand, are of the opinion, no. By virtue of the fact that now it's a finished shoe, despite the fact that it still has to be pulled off the form, but still, the shoe on the form is now considered a completed product. And so the Gemara now is suggesting that this is, in fact, the exact same machlokas as it relates to whether or not one can take it off on Shabbos. And it's very simple to plug in these two positions. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it is not yet considered a Gemara until after it's removed. So that means that according to Rabbi Eliezer, taking it off the form does what? That puts the finishing touch on the shoe. That makes it into a kli. That's tikkun mana. On the other hand, according to the Chachamim, it already was a finished shoe while it was on the form. So taking it off is not completed because it already has been completed while it was on the form. And so therefore the two braises are just simply reflecting the viewpoint of Rebbe Lazar and the Chachamim. According to Rebbe Lazar, one would not be allowed to take it off the form on Shabbos because that's tikkun. According to the Chachamim, it's already kvar misukan. It's already been finished. And therefore, you're allowed to take it off the form. So the Gemara says, great. So we have really understood the two brises based on these two positions in the Mishnah and Kelim. The Gemara, however, is going to deal with one more issue, and that, of course, is a muksa issue. Now, obviously, vis-a-vis the shoe is not muksa. But the shoe form, however, is going to be muksa on Shabbos. And so the Gemara now wants to know, how are you moving the shoe form on Shabbos? The Gemara is assuming that in order to move the shoe, remove the shoe off the form, you're going to end up moving the form as well. So Hanicha LaRava, so the Gemara says, now according to Rava, it's actually not difficult to understand at all. Remember, we go now back to the 17th parak of Shabbos where we discussed Muksa formally. And there in the 17th parak, we had a machlokas between Rava and Abaye in terms of the parameters of Muksa. Rava allows for the moving of Muksa, even though it's a Klisha Malachta L'Isser, but according to Rava, one can move it Bein L'Gufo, Bein L'Mekomo. Whether because I need the item itself on Shabbos for something which is permitted, or I need Mekomo, I need the place in which it's occupying right now. So, can I move the form according to Rava? The answer would be absolutely yes. Because right now, I need the space that that form is occupying. That's called the interior of the shoe. I need that space because what do I need to go into that space? So I need my foot to go into that space. So right now, this is a perfect example of Sarach Mekoma. So according to Rava, can I remove the form, which is a muksa item, out of the shoe? The answer according to Rava is yes. Because this is a perfect example of Sarach Mekoma. So the Gemara says, so I understand that for Rava there is no issue of muksa in terms of moving the form. But Abai's conclusion there in the 17th parak is that I can only move these items only of Lesarach Gufo, but I cannot move Lesarach Mekomo. So now, according to Abaye, what would allow me to move the form? I can't move the form, because the only reason why I would move the form right now is only for Lesarach Mekomo purposes, not Lesarach Gufo purposes. Now, I'll just put this in here right now, parenthetically. You could construct a scenario where I do need the form Lesarach Gufo, but we're assuming right now that the only allowance to move it is only for Lesarach Mekomo purposes, and so therefore, with the Gemara now wants to know, according to Abaye, how are you moving the form? Okay, so Michael and Amr, so what are you going to say? How come am I skin on? Beruffly. So the Gemara says, okay, but the entire assumption going into the discussion was that the shoe was tight on the form, and the Gemara says, not necessarily. It could very well be that the shoe was loose fitting on the form, and I could remove the shoe off the form without having to move the form. And so the Gemara says, that's possible. And not only is it possible, we have a Braisa, Detanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im Haya Ruffo Imutar. So the Braisa quotes the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda that says that if the shoe is loose-fitting on the form, so then I could take it off. And now we understand, in this context, the reason why is because I'm able to move the shoe without having to move the form and not violate the Isra of Muksa. So the Gemara says, well, let's think about this. Taima de Rafu, halo Rafu lo. Well, the Gemara says, now, if I just look at the Braisa of Rabbi Yehuda, so, and make a very simple diuk, the only reason why I can move it is only because it's roughly, only because it's loose-fitting. But if it's tight-fitting, I can't move it. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so if anything, now the Braisa here is supporting the position of Abaye. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Hanicha le'abaye damar davar shemlach le'isra tzarech gufo mutal tzarech mekoma aser shapir. So according to Abaye, if it's tight, so that means I can't move it because I can't move the shoe without moving the form. The form is muksa, and here I don't have tzarech gufo, I only have tzarech mekoma. And for Abaye, that's not enough cause to move an item on Shabbos. But Ela L'Rabba Damar Ben L'Tzarech Gufo Ben L'Tzarech Mekomo Mutar My Irya Rafui Afilu L'Rafui Nami. But according to Rava, even if it was tight fitting, I'd still be allowed to move both the shoe and the form. The shoe obviously is a non-muksa item, and the form, even though it's a muksa item, but I need that space right now. I need the Mekomo. I want to put now my foot in that shoe, so I need so it's Tzarech Mekomo. So why wouldn't I be able to move the form? So the Gemara says, Ahi de Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum de Rabbi Eliezer hi. So the Gemara says, defending Rava would not be a problem. Because I'll just simply say that that Braisa regarding Rabbi Yehuda was specific to the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanya. In fact, let's say, take a look at another Braisa. The Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Imaya Rafu Imutar. Meaning that now within the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, remember the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer that we learned in the Mishnah and Kalim, is that if the shoe is on the form and it's tight fitting, so it is not Mekabel Tumah because it has not arrived at the point of the Gemar Malacha. Now within the definition, Rabbi Eliezer, of Gemar Malacha, if the shoe was loose-fitting on top of the form, so it has achieved the point of Gemar Malacha because now I don't need any kind of Chachma to separate the shoe off the form. The shoe is now just going to come right off the form. It's loose-fitting. So this distinction of tight-fitting, loose-fitting is not specific to Muksa. It's specific to when is the shoe considered a finished product, according to the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. If it's tight-fitting, so then it has not achieved Gemar Malacha, and if it's loose-fitting, it has achieved the point of Gemar Malacha. Hajj Malach told them that is the end of the 20th parak, and this is where we're going to end, and let's quickly recap. We started off the daf talking about various things that one can do in terms of animal preparation of food for animals, in terms of sweeping in the trough. The Mishnah described the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Dosa in terms of what you can do in terms of sweeping the trough. The Gemara concluded that Chachamim argue on both points, meaning sweeping the trough both on the ground and in the kli, and also moving it over to the side in order to make sure the animal doesn't step on it. Both of these activities are going to be prohibited, says the Gemara, like the sheet of the Chachamim. I'm taking the leftovers of one animal and giving it to another animal. The Gemara clarified that's talking about where the second animal is going to eat it. And that means to say that the first animal did not drool on top of it. And so the Gemara says that one can do is one can transfer the leftovers from a donkey to a cow, but not the opposite. Donkeys do not drool. Cows do, in fact, drool. The Mishnah on Kuf Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph, talks about Tiltum and Aksad. And the Mishnah said that if you have straw that was not set aside for Shabbos, so it's muksa, so one can move it with the rest of their body, not with their hands. And Rashi described in the Mishnah as Tiltum and Aksad. We acknowledged in the Mishnah that this may be a different category of Tiltum and Aksad, one in which you're not even moving it with your hands. But anyway, for simplicity's sake, we just simply called it Tiltum and Aksad, and Rashi did so in the Mishnah as well, so we're in good shape. The Mishnah also talked about taking things out of a press on Shabbos, making a distinction between a press used by the balabas versus a press that's used by the professional. The Gemara jumped through a lot of topics from the Mishnah until the end of the parak. And just quickly to highlight the various topics that we spoke about. One, we spoke about pulling a turnip out of the ground, even though it's going to be moving earth as it's coming out of the ground. That's going to be fine because that is what's called tiltum and atzad. Two, we talked about grinding up peppers on Shabbos. If you do a couple of shinuyim, you do so with the back of the handle, you do so one at a time, although that point is open for controversy. But if you do a shinui, so then you're allowed to grind up the pebbles in this unusual manner on Shabbos. Again, Tosos quotes Rav Acha that this was talking about Yantav, but Tosos says we are still talking about Shabbos. And next halacha we went over is when you're coming out of the water on Shabbos, you happen to have been walking through water, and you're coming out of the water on Shabbos, make sure to dry yourself before you continue walking, because then you end up carrying four amos in a karmelis. What about in the water itself? The Gemara says that's not an issue because that's only koach, and the Chachamim did not make the gzera of koach in a karmelis. Our next halacha that we went over is if you have dirt on your foot, so where can you rub that dirt off of? Can you rub it on the ground? Can you rub it on the side of a house? Machlokis in many different directions on this topic. The Gemara talks about Rava's gzeras. Rava says that one is not allowed to sit at the edge of the mavui, right next to the lechi, for concern that you're going to pick up an item right outside the lechi, not realizing that you just moved an item from a Rishus Rabban to Rishus Yachid. You can't rock another gzera of Rava. You can't rock a barrel back and forth on the ground. You may come to smooth the ground. Another gzera by Rava is that you cannot stuff a moist towel into the spigot, as you may come to violate the Isser of Schita. If you have any dirt on your clothing, so you can rub at it, but only from the inside of your shirt, not from the outside of the shirt, and of course using no water whatsoever. The Gemara on the bottom of the Amma talked about what happens if you have dirt on your shoes. Can you scrape off your shoes, not violating the Isser of Memachlik? We have conflicting brises on this topic. One brisa says that if it's a new shoe, you can do so. The second brisa said, under all circumstances, old shoes and new shoes, you're not allowed to do so. You're not allowed to scrape off your shoes because you may be in violation of memachik. The brisa, as we're now on the top of the Amud Beis in our review, the brisa talks about oiling up your legs, oiling up your body, and then lying down on leather. That may be also a violation of ibud. That is part of the processing of the leather and by putting rubbing oil into it. Maybe a distinction to be made if your intention is just simply to shine these shoes as opposed to actually processing it. But the Gemara's conclusion, Rav Chisda's conclusion, is that only if the amount of oil is just a nominal amount, then it would be okay. But if you're using a significant amount of oil, then under no circumstances can then you put your foot into the shoe, or can you then rub your body onto the leather sheet. And a couple of other gzeras, wearing shoes that are much bigger than your foot is going to be prohibited because you're going to end up picking them up. And the Gemara says a number of concerns of shoes as it relates to women, similar that they're going to end up taking it off and then end up carrying it in a Rishus Rabbim. And finally, our last topic that we discussed was the topic of a shoe that's on the forum. Taking it off the forum on Shabbos, is that going to be a problem? According to Rabbi Eliezer, it is, because it's not a finished product until you take it off. So that's the makev epatish of the shoe. According to the Chachamim, you can take it off on Shabbos because it already is considered a finished product even while it's on the forum. And the Gemara then went through the various aspects of, if I'm taking it off the form, aren't I then going to be moving the form? Isn't that going to be a problem of muksa? And the Gemara's conclusion is, yes, it is in fact going to be a problem of muksa, but only according to Abayi, not according to Rava, because according to Rava, you have the heter of tzarech mekoma, which is in fact, by the way, is how we paskin. So ends the 20th parak of the Masechta. Yerzeh Hashem, we begin tomorrow with the 21st parak of the Masechta.